We know that in total, it's roughly $58 billion over the 2 years. But the probably the two things that people are reacting to the most, number one is that some of it involves depleting the reserves that are currently at about $2.5 billion, going down to around $1 billion. The other is the governor is going to once again try to get the legislature to pass a capital gains tax, this time a 9% capital gains tax to cover the spending that he says is even more necessary since we're still in the pandemic.
Well, there's a fatal flaw. If the public were to accept the governor's capital gains income tax, the money he's using to fund ongoing programs, the rainy day fund, is gone. And that's not sustainable, and there's no guarantee that the courts will accept it or the voters of the state of Washington. So you come back in a year or two with another huge deficit because of an irresponsible decision.
Well, one of the rumors, maybe it's not a rumor, we'll test that theory with you possibly, around Olympia amongst the Democrats is that the goal is to get this issue to the state Supreme Court and get the high court to make a decision one way or another on capital gains versus an income tax and whether or not capital gains taxes are in fact constitutional.
Well, Congressman Newhouse got an opinion from the IRS, which knows tax laws. They said it clearly is an income tax. But from FOIA requests of Senator Jamie Peterson, who is a senior Seattle Democrat, it's exactly what you say. Let's do anything we can to get this to the court, because you realize most of the court nowadays are Inslee appointees or other liberal appointees and not initially elected by the voters.
So you think that there's a strong chance that simply, I don't want to say to prove a point, but to push the issue to the Supreme Court, that the democratically controlled chambers will approve something along these lines this time?
Well, there's been many gimmicks used to get there. There was the local income tax proposed in Seattle, voted down in Olympia, initiative to the voters, and now this. It's all to try and get a bite of the apple that says, hey, this is constitutional, it's a simple majority, and every liberal's dream has now come true.
Well, when asked about the capital gains slash income tax issue during his availability, the governor said that if lawmakers can find a different way to fund the things that he wants funded, he's open to listening to that, which is what happened in the last two-year operating cycle. Some different maneuvers were taken so that a capital gains tax wasn't a part of the plans.
Well, let's go back to where we really are. We had a terrible budget situation last summer, last fall, but as of the December revenue forecast and caseload, there is no deficit for the remainder of this biennium. There's a carry forward balance that makes the 21-23 biennium very reasonable without tax increases. In fact, we can probably use some of the rainy day fund to help buy down the unemployment insurance tax increases that the governor seems to ignore, or some of the other things that I believe the public generally agrees on. But it requires some financial discipline, and this governor believes you need a double-digit increase at every corner, and that's not how it is out in the real world.
One of the other interesting things that I found in his announcement, right off the top, he said that he is going to ask lawmakers to, right out of the gate, approve about $100 million in a rental assistance program and another $100 million in small business loans. COVID related, of course. And the first thing that popped into my head was, isn't this what other states have been using their special session for?
That's exactly right. We could have used CARES Act money for this months ago. And I got to tell you, what good does a loan do to a business that is on the verge of going under with no clear opening date in sight? It just doesn't help. And we may see some help from the federal government on this, and we probably have some leeway. But the loan program is just a non-starter.
One of the other, obviously, he rolled out his transportation budget and his capital projects wish list as well. In the transportation budget, I found something that stuck out, and it goes back to the breaching of the dams. And what he wanted to do previously, obviously, was tear down some of the Snake River dams, help the salmon runs, help the orcas and the like. And I know that many people on the other side of the issue were saying what would be better all around is to fix and or remove culverts that around the state. Well, in his transportation budget, he has $724 million allocated for 136 different culvert removal projects to help salmon. Is it, you know, people are going to look at the number. That's a lot of money. But is this, in your view, a better alternative than having to continue to fight against him wanting to tear down the dams?
Well, I think it has some merit, but obviously trying to do it in one biennium is hopeless. But first you have to remember, it doesn't do any good to have salmon habitat opened up if you continue to have a cesspool of dead zones in Puget Sound. We probably would be better off in some ways looking at cleaning up the sewers that are ruining Puget Sound for fish.
Talking with Senator Mark Schessler from Ritzville and here on the Bottom Line, News Radio 610 KONA, and still about a month or so away from the legislative session. Now, everyone knows the makeup of the House and the Senate, and the last, it seems like, couple of sessions, whether it was a budget year or not, Republicans have been basically locked out of any kind of negotiations on anything, whether it's a supplemental budget, an operational budget, because of the numbers and the makeup of the chambers. What is the approach for Republicans, at least in your chamber, in the Senate, going into this session, knowing the landscape of the economics of the state, and now what the governor wants to do as well?
I think we have to be better communicators than ever before, because the virtual session is going to lock out a lot of our friends that come to Olympia. You know, they called Reagan the great communicator, and I think we have to look to our techniques to communicate with the public, because the public, when we look at what they do on advisory votes, what they do on ballot measures, clearly doesn't follow this regimen. So whether it's social media, talk radio, email, we will have to be better communicators than ever, because I believe the public agrees with us on the overwhelming number of these issues. I've met with Tri-Cities leaders, restaurant owners, and we'd be much better off for a reasonable compromise to let these people do business than to offer them loans they probably can't pay. Think of every restaurant that's struggling in the Tri-Cities region. What good does a loan do? Now, helping with their unemployment insurance, some federal help, great, but let's get them open. I think these people want a hand up, not a hand out.
Senator Mark Schessler from Ritzville, appreciate you spending a few minutes with us after the governor has rolled out his proposed budget. All the best to you and your family during the holidays, and hopefully we'll get a chance to talk again pre-legislative session in January.
Well, thank you, and Merry Christmas to you and all of your listeners.